Good afternoon and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Author and speaker Melody Beattie said, "Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos into order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, and a stranger into a friend." The great Mahatma Gandhi posed that man often becomes what he believes himself to be. If he keeps on saying to himself that he cannot do a certain thing, it is quite possible that he may end by really becoming incapable of doing it. On the contrary, if he has the belief that he can do it, he shall surely acquire the capacity to do it, even if he lacked the ability at the beginning. Gratitude and positive thinking have always been credited with special powers to heal and turn tragedy into redemption. They are practices and attitudes of mind that some of the great leaders of our time have turned into their turned to in their quest to overcome adversity. Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Mandela, Viktor Frankl, all of them wrote and spoke about the power of love, compassion, forgiveness, and grace to heal and overcome any and all shackles imposed by external forces. Joining me today to discuss the gifts of gratitude and the power of positive thinking is licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. Dr. Beath is a fellowship-trained specialist in the assessment and treatment of anxiety disorders. She currently maintains a clinical and consulting practice specializing in evidence-based treatment of anxiety and mood disorders. Dr. Beath works with organizations to provide consultation and training about trauma-informed system design and best practices for trauma treatment. She also provides specialized training and clinical supervision in cognitive behavioral therapy. Dr. Beath is a former assistant professor of psychology at the University of Alaska Anchorage and has instructed, trained, and clinically supervised interns and postdoctoral residents at UCSF, UAA, and the National Center for PTSD. I want to remind listeners that we can be reached with your questions or comments in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us, of course, is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You have to spell all that out, line1. If you have any questions for Dr. Beath or comments about our topic, please call in or email us your thoughts, and we'll get them on the air. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Beath. Thanks for taking the time to join me today.
Hi. Thanks so much for asking me to come back.
Yeah, it's good. I got a lot of positive feedback from our first show, which we did, The Science of Happiness. And this sort of has evolved into a exercise in sort of The Science of Happiness Part 2.
That's right.
We're going to delve into sort of the underneath aspects of finding happiness. And the focus is going to be on gratitude, obviously, keeping an attitude of gratitude, positive thinking, and their effects on the promotion of emotional and physical health. We'll also look briefly at some tools and exercises that folks can use. So I guess before we get going on the content, let's start with what's it mean to be, when I talk about being a grateful person or the definition of gratitude, what are we talking about for our conversation?
So gratitude is universally considered a virtue. It's a moral emotion because it's motivated by a concern for things outside of yourself. So it's the tendency to see life as a gift. It's the opposite of entitlement in that way. So it's recognizing what is and appreciating it. It's way more than just being grateful for what you have and what you've been given, although that's very important too. It's a recognition of the marvelous. So it's the opposite of apathy or disinterest or resignation. It's noticing and appreciating all of the marvelous things in this world and the people that are in it. It's having curiosity and interest in this world and in subjects and ideas. So thereby it's the opposite of self-preoccupation. It's investing in what is. It's investing in the people around you. It's putting down the phone and really listening to what people are saying and getting excited about it. It's noticing what's wonderful all around you all the time. It's feeling it, saying it out loud, amplifying it, spreading it back and forth.
There's a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. I don't know if you've ever read it, but one of the lessons in there is that there is no such thing as a dull moment. It's just that we lose our ability to recognize and appreciate and be grateful for the small, like you're talking about, the small, amazing pleasures,
yeah.
the little things in
yeah.
life. What is the research we're talking about, the evidence that suggests, I mean, we've all heard about the power of positive thinking and, you know, overcoming illness and through your mind. And what does the research show us? I mean, is that a real thing, or is it self-help books and marketing the power of positive thinking, or is that is that a real thing?
Yeah, it is, and that's a great question. So we haven't always studied, in the science of psychology, we haven't always studied what's right with you and what yields positive emotion. In fact, that's a fairly recent idea. But in the last 10 years, at a minimum, they've done a lot of research, actually, on gratitude, other positive emotions, and its connection to greater life satisfaction. So, but let's go back to just gratitude itself. So here's just in the nutshell, kind of a summary is that highly grateful people experience positive emotions more often and more deeply. So they simply report a greater satisfaction with life. They report more hope. They tend to experience less depression and less anxiety. So in research, they're rated by others as being people that are more empathic, forgiving, helpful, more supportive people. They're less focused on materialistic pursuits. They're more spiritually oriented. There's just lots of research that demonstrates that the person's ability to notice and appreciate the good elements of their life can improve their well-being.
And these research studies aren't all, I mean, it's not self-report. It's also other reported, like people
That's
observing.
Right. So as observed by others, including spouses, which is really interesting, a lot of the actual studies are summarized and you know, gone into a lot of detail in a really terrific book. Well, you know, I would probably put it on the website, but it's called Thanks. That's literally the title, Thanks. And it's by Professor Emmons, I believe, and he summarizes all of this research.
That's a great title for a book.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We did have some special, specific resources that you had given us for the show today, and those are going to be up on the website if they're not already. Are they? Yes. I'm getting an indication that Dr. Beath gave us, in addition to my resources, which are available online at alaskapublic.org, you can check out Dr. Beath's got some books, I think, and a couple of articles and some links to places where you can go and practice some of this stuff. So check out those links online. Speaking about gratitude and positive thinking, can you, you spoke yesterday when we were chatting about the, talked briefly about this study of nuns. Can you tell our listeners about that study and what that
Yeah, it's so about? It's so interesting. But before I move into that, let me just say one quick thing more about the the significant health benefits and emotional benefits that come from gratitude practice. So this is just a really simple intervention that has been replicated many times. So they break people into two groups, and they ask the grateful condition group to keep a record or a log of five things they were grateful for just once a week. So it's just a weekly, a minor kind of intervention. The other group lists five daily hassles, so hassles that they had over the week. So something negative, you know, something they were irritated mm-hmm. by. So they kept these respective logs, the two conditions, for 10 weeks, okay? So not that long. Here's the outcome, is the participants in the grateful condition reported that they felt better about their lives as a whole. They were more optimistic about the future. They reported fewer health complaints. Chronic pain conditions were felt less, and they spent more time exercising, which is kind of an interesting side benefit. Other studies, they replicate this study many times. Other study participants who were in the grateful condition, so that means the folks that kept the gratitude log, they were rated by others as being more joyful, enthusiastic, interested, attentive, energetic, excited. This is how they were deemed by others, rated by others. That's so interesting. Also, the people that were in the gratitude condition reported offering other people more emotional support or help with a personal problem over the course of their week. So thereby, this gratitude practice or this idea becomes pro-social, or helping other people, or making it bigger in that way. So just in a nutshell, there's just repeat studies that show that folks that are more grateful or people who are deliberately engaged in gratitude practice show significantly more positive affect, more satisfaction with their life, they show less negative affect, so less negative emotion.
That sounds like that commercial that was on TV where somebody sees something, somebody helping somebody, and then they help somebody else, and they help somebody else, that pay it forward kind of concept, that gratitude can spread.
Yeah, I believe that for sure. Let's talk about this nun study, though. Yeah. It's so interesting. So there's just this really remarkable study of happiness and longevity, or positive emotions and longevity. So they studied 180 nuns, so the Sisters of Notre Dame in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And what's so cool about nun studies is that they're living a similar life, right, if they're in a convent. So it eliminates a lot of the variables. So
the environment's controlled.
Correct. So they have the same diet. They're not smoking or drinking. They have similar reproductive and marital histories. There's no STDs, for example. They come from the same socioeconomic class in this particular study.
Yeah.
They have the same medical care. So this eliminates a lot of the variables. So what they did was they have writing samples from these 180 nuns. So they have 180 writing samples that the nuns did when they were young, when they were taking their final vows to enter the nunnery, the convent. Thank you. So it's a momentous occasion. They're asked to write kind of a short essay about their life. And so then at the point of study, which was, you know, years later, they go back and they look at the effusiveness, the positive emotions conveyed in these writing samples. So the 180 statements of these writing samples, and they look at the amount of positive feeling. It's quantified by the raters, who didn't know how long the nuns had lived. And so then they look at how long did these nuns live, and what was the quality of their life and their health. And so what they found was just this incredible wide variation based on the positive emotions, the effusiveness, the animus that these nuns expressed in their writing samples. So let me just give you a brief example, because it's just really cool. So here's just a brief snippet of what these writing samples look like. So this is nun number one, who, by the way, at the point of study was still, which was 2002, was still alive at age 98.
Wow.
And she reports herself, self-description as, "I've never been sick a day in my life." So this is her short essay about her life when she was young. This is what she wrote. She says, "God started my life off well by bestowing upon me grace of inestimable value. The past year, which I spent as a candidate studying at Notre Dame, has been a very happy one. Now I look forward with eager joy to receiving the holy habit of Our Lady and to a life of union with love divine." So listen to all of these expressions of effusiveness, of vigor, of gratefulness, of positive emotion. She says, "I'm very happy, eager joy, grace and value." Okay? So compare it to the next writing sample, which is a nun that died of a stroke at age 59. She says, this is what she wrote when she was a young woman. She says, "I was born on September 26, 1909, the eldest of seven children, five girls and two boys. My candidate year was spent in the mother house teaching chemistry and second year Latin. With God's grace, I intend to do my best for the spread of religion and for my personal satisfaction." So no effusiveness here, just the facts. Okay, so they looked at 180 statements like this, and here's the startling results. So 90% of the most effusive nuns, so the nuns that are conveying positive emotion, vigor in this way, are still alive at age 85, and that's versus 34% of the least effusive. So the ones that had the least amount of positive emotion. So then 54% of the most effusive were alive at age 94 versus 11% of the least effusive. So researchers looked for other factors, like how devout these nuns were, how intellectual the essays were. So maybe, you know, there would be a protective benefit of cognitive ability, but no correlation to longevity. So the correlation to longevity, or living a good life, or a long life, in this way, was the amount of positive emotion expressed.
Positive, heartfelt thankfulness, gratitude for all the things that they have. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Nun studies are great.
Nun studies and twin studies, right? That's interesting. Another thing that you shared with me, and I found this in some of your research or in some of your training materials that I was reviewing, was a quote by Oprah Winfrey that said, "I know for sure that what we dwell on is what we become." What does she mean by that, and how's that linked to our discussion about happiness and positive thinking and gratitude?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I'm no scholar in Oprah Winfrey, of course, but everyone knows who she is and typically admires her and so forth. So sometimes it's nice.
Seems like a smart lady.
Yeah, certainly a lady that's transcended a lot of pain in her life, actually, mm-hmm. by her own self-report. But anyway, so what I take from this theme that. This idea that she said there, and what other people talk about as well, is this idea that what we focus on expands. So it's this idea that we're creating our current reality thought by thought. So what we practice at, we get better at. So if we rehearse our pain, we're amplifying our pain, right? If we fixate on discomfort, we're expanding on it. So we spin it up into suffering. So, you know, the central feature of an anxiety disorder is we begin to organize our behavior around the avoidance of our pain or organize our behavior around moderating our pain, right? That's what a lot of substance abuse is about. Hmm. So, but even just outside of that, you know, often we attach ourselves to our pain and we start to judge our lives based on how we feel and not on what we do. So in that way, we become our pain. So the alternative to this would be to accept that we don't have to be comfortable all the time. We're not going to be.
I want to get back to acceptance in just a second. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guest today is clinical psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. We are discussing how gratitude and the power of positive thinking can improve emotional and physical wellness. I want to remind listeners, you can reach us with your questions or comments in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433. You can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. I also want to encourage folks to give us feedback about today's show or suggest topics of interest for future shows. All right, before that... 5 second or 10 second interlude for business. We're talking about acceptance. And can you take just a second to discuss, I mean, how you're using the term acceptance in this sort of healing and overcoming pain kind of way? What do you mean by acceptance?
So by acceptance, we mean allowing for what is. We're allowing for the discomfort of this life. And so this gets really tricky to understand. It's a very intellectual kind of principle because often people confuse our meaning and they say, well, if I allow for this pain that I have, or if I accept, for example, the condition of my life that's very difficult or something like that, then you're suggesting that we like it or we approve of it or that we want it. And I don't want it. I don't want to hurt any more than I already do. Right. And of course, and I don't want you to hurt any more than you already do. But the problem is you're already hurting. And if you're organizing your behavior around your pain, then your life becomes about avoiding your pain or moderating your pain rather than building a life that's based on how you truly want to live. So acceptance is not so much about changing your problems or your pain. It's rather about changing the direction of your life so that your life is more about what you value. So when we accept discomfort or we allow for discomfort, the unnecessary amplification of pain stops. You allow for what is. So when that happens, you release the struggle. Your life begins to open up and you don't have to defend all the time. You become more psychologically flexible. And when you're psychologically flexible, then we're talking about having the luxury of engaging in behaviors that yield meaning. So then we're talking about you can build the life that you truly want to live.
I worked with a young person who was having massive panic attacks like 3 or 4 times a week. And one of the things I asked this person to do was to sit and to write what it was like to experience a panic attack while they were in that panic attack, which I've never had anybody do. But he was able to sit with it and write this 5-page thing. And he said that just allowing it to happen, and accepting it for what it was and that it wasn't going to kill him. It helped him get through it, softened it, shortened the duration, and let him know that the end is coming, that I'm going to get through this and I'm going to be okay.
Absolutely. So that's just a beautiful intervention and a strategy to help the person go through the arc of anxiety, which they're going through anyway. But with this way, they're staying with the emotion, allowing it to process through the body versus moderating it away via some external chemical.
Pushing
or some
it
other
away,
thing.
Denying it, running.
Right. And because avoidance maintains anxiety, but you know we're going off in another direction, which I'd love to talk about. I love to talk about anxiety treatment.
Yeah, anxiety is your thing.
But it sure is. But that's a that's another issue. So anyway, just in a nutshell, to summarize here with acceptance, here's 6 months of discussion summarized down to one sentence, which is, you know, our task is to acknowledge our pain. We're not denying pain. This is what we talked about in our last show a lot,
right.
Is we're not denying pain. Pain is part of this life, big time. So we acknowledge our pain, we accept it, and we live right on through it. Because indeed, you already are.
No way around it.
Right, you already are. Anxiety doesn't kill you.
Another concept that I read in your some of your materials was the idea and the concept, which is a sort of it's an interesting concept and one that I've never really thought of this way, but the idea of becoming more satisfied with your past. What do you mean by that? And how does one become more satisfied with their past? It's done. It's set. We talk about that all the time. You can't go back and change the past.
Right. So how we feel about the past depends entirely on our memories, yeah? So what if we have bad memories, right? What if we have a trauma story? What if we're a trauma survivor? What if we've been through war, et cetera, et cetera? So there's no known ways right now in science or in medicine to erase memories. We have no mechanism for that. Sometimes, you know, when you work with profoundly traumatized people, I wish we did, you know, I wish we had a little surgery, you know, we could go in and we could cut it out. That'd be nice. But we don't have that right now. So here's what we do have. We have transcendence, which means forgiveness. And that's a super intellectual idea. I mean, it deserves its own show. We could talk, you know, for several hours just about that. But It's a very evolved view, and often it's misunderstood because folks think, well, if I forgive the person that hurt me, then it's like suggesting that it was right what happened, or that I don't have to fight this injustice. But we're not saying that. We're saying accept what is and recover anyway, because you're the one that gets to live a good life. So let me give you, do we have time for my short narrative? Okay,
yeah.
My short little anecdote. Here's just a brief little anecdote of this, is that I was recently in a hotel room and the TV was on and some news program, something I don't normally kind of watch, was on in the background. And they had a guest on, and the guest was a trauma survivor. So a woman, the woman who was sexually assaulted by Roman Polanski when she was 13 years old. So Roman Polanski is a famous film director.
Mm-hmm.
So folks might know this story. It happened in the early 70s, I believe. So she's on the show now, and they're asking her questions, you know, gosh, you know, it must have been so difficult that you know, you're 13 years old and you're, you know, kind of up against this powerful film director, Hollywood, you know, he has a lot of support. No one really believes you necessarily. You know, you've had to kind of battle your whole life with people don't believe you. They don't rally around you. They don't support you. And so what she said was, yeah, you know, it would have been a lot easier if people believed me or rallied around me. And we know that, you know, that really helps people recover. But she said, you know, my advice to other trauma survivors or certainly rape survivors is, she said, don't wait for that. She said, accept that other people aren't necessarily going to believe you or support you if they don't, and recover anyway. Accept it and recover anyway. And God, it meant so much to me hearing this because of what it represents. It's so evolved. Because she wins, you see, because she's the one that gets to live a good life. So that's just like opening the cage door and walking out.
Because so much about trauma recovery is about reliving that event. I mean, the problem, that's what PTSD is, reliving that event as if it's still happening, and all those feelings and those fears and those anxieties. So that, yeah, that's nice. All right, we are going to, we have a caller. Judith, you are on the air.
Hi, thank you so much.
Thanks.
I agree with much of what you have been talking about. I do, however, think your discussion about the past and coming to acceptance and being okay with it is a bit simplistic when you are talking about, well, trauma and the example you just used about rape. And in my own professional experience, I find that there is some psychological remediation, perhaps, that's necessary. And I have found that EMDR is an effective tool. And my own research on the data backs it up, that it can be a very quick turnaround recovery response for significant trauma victims, and perhaps a way to ease into the acceptance and forgiveness. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I'm the first to say that trauma is, believe me, more than real. I've devoted my life to the treatment of trauma. Without question. So people need treatment. I'm not saying any of these things are easy. In fact, this whole concept of forgiveness or transcendence of the things that hurt us, I mean, that's an extremely large idea. It's impossible to summarize in the natures of this conversation, certainly. But, you know, to speak to what you're saying, you know, do people need treatment? Absolutely. Are there different, do they need support? Are there different routes to get there? Yes, there are. And is EMDR one of them? Yes. So EMDR is one of several evidence-based treatments for trauma specifically, PTSD specifically. So it's one of many.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Judith, for bringing that up. EMDR is used quite often and effectively, depending on which research you look at. But there is some evidence that it is effective, and I am I'm trained in EMDR, and I do some of that work myself, and I've seen some very good results. So, yeah, don't rule anything out. There's lots of ways to approach this stuff. Dr. Beath is not, you are not EMDR trained, correct? Or, I mean, you have some familiarity with it. But.
I do in the sense of I'm aware that it's an evidence-based treatment, but I'm trained in prolonged exposure. So it's Edna Foa's model.
Okay.
Yeah.
EMDR, for those who might not be familiar with it, is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. It is a way of taking a traumatic memory and sort of reworking it in the brain. That's a simplification, and pairing it up with more positive feelings versus negative cognition. So, yeah, that's another show, probably.
Oh, sure, for sure. That's several other shows. But so let's go back to this concept of how we feel about the past. So there's two ways to increase satisfaction with the past. So, like we were just talking about, kind of practicing forgiveness or acceptance to loosen the grip of the past, to transcend it. And the other route is gratitude. And how gratitude works is that it amplifies the savoring and the appreciation of the good events that do occur. So we don't just let those pass us by. We all have some at some times. And we want to savor those and appreciate those when they occur. So we want to amplify those good memories that we have. So I used to teach a class in positive psychology, and one of the assignments for the students was writing a gratitude letter. And it wasn't just a short little thing. It was a, you know, meaningful kind of comprehensive paper that they had to write to an individual, living or dead. And then we had a gratitude night where we all got together and lit candles and read the letters out loud to one another. And then the rest of the class served as kind of bearing witness to these expressions of gratitude. And it was, oh man, it was just so cool. It was undeniable. So people got a high from it. And think about that, we didn't really know each other either. So I didn't necessarily know the students. So they didn't necessarily know each other. And none of us at all knew the people that they respectively wrote the letters about. Hmm. But that didn't even matter. You didn't have to know the individual stories. What was important was that we were witnessing virtue. People got a high off of just being in the room. It was extremely moving. It was undeniable.
There is no question that those, I mean, I listen, I come into the office sometimes like all teary-eyed because I've been listening to some story on NPR about, you know, a conversation between a man who's dying of brain cancer and his daughter, and they're talking about all the grateful things that they have in their life. And it just, yeah, it's like a flood of emotion. It's intense, and it's super healing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's time for our halfway break. So I want to remind people that you are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. Our local number is 550-8433. Toll free, you can reach us at 1-888-353-5752 and our email at line1alaska@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with our guest, Dr. Jennifer Beath. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection from KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, I have in studio clinical psychologist Dr. Jennifer Beath. Today we are discussing the gifts of gratitude and the power of positive thinking. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard continues to bring you the latest health information on Line One 3 Mondays each month, and I will continue to bring you a show once a month about mental and emotional health. You can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org, call us locally at 550-8433, or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you're listening between 9 and 10 tonight or on Monday evening, you will be hearing a taped recording, so we won't be taking any calls. Over the break, we got a email, which I want to read real quick. It's just, it goes back to the last caller about EMDR. The listener writes, EMDR is an excellent therapy to help one let go of what has happened to you in the past. It breaks the brain's cycle of naturally dropping back into a painful response. Once one is out of that response cycle, then it's much easier to see the positive in life. EMDR worked for me and has worked for many of my friends. So there's a personal account of that. Yeah. Okay, so before the break, thanks to, I guess it's Anne for sending that in. Before the break, we were talking about the becoming more satisfied with your past, gratitude, forgiveness, embracing who you are, all of you, the negative, the positive, the pain, the joys. And now we talk about authentic happiness and the idea that authentic happiness, which is a good website and a good book, but authentic happiness comes from the exercising. This is one of the things that you write about, the exercising of strengths and virtues. Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the last show that we have, we talked a lot about or somewhat about, you know, these kind of shortcuts to pleasure, or the idea of pleasures versus character strengths and virtues. So shortcuts to pleasures are things we can probably all relate to. So ice cream sundaes, you know, drugs and alcohol, spectator sports, pornography, infidelity. You know, sometimes it can be a real shallow enterprise. You know, but either way, they're easy. They're things that we do to feel different, feel better. But the most powerful experience of happiness or positive emotions comes instead from the exercise of our character strengths and our virtues. So virtue is almost exclusively about what's doing what's right, despite our own personal interest or what's easy for us. So easy, or that idea of easy, doesn't really apply when we talk about things that matter. So how we define character strengths is that they're valued in their own right. They're not just a means to an end. They're valued in every culture. They're malleable. They serve us in good times and in bad. And it's moving to witness people executing virtue. So someone displaying a character strength doesn't diminish anyone in the atmosphere. It elevates. Everyone is elevated. So like those students reading these wonderful letters about the person that we didn't even know that they were grateful to and the impact that that person had had on their life, we're not connected to the story, but we're witnessing virtue. We're witnessing the exercise of gratitude in that particular example, and it was moving. It's elevating. So just some examples of some different character strengths, and there's actually a really terrific book called The Classification and Handbook of Character Strengths and Virtues. Mm-hmm. So folks refer to it as sort of the anti-DSM. So the DSM is our big catalog of pathology, our catalog of mental disease. So what's wrong with you? Yeah,
all the illnesses, and
right?
Dis-ease
all of them, the mental illnesses, you know, the DSM. So there's kind of this other book that we, you know, sort of affectionately refer to as the anti-DSM, and it's a big catalog or a classification of what's right with us, what's marvelous about the human animal. So
you can go through this book and just select out all the awesome things about you. Like, you can be like, okay, I'm diagnosing myself with, like, awesome personality, affect, or, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't work that way.
That's a great way to look at it.
But
to focus on health.
How many people do that, right? That's a great question, because very few people, for example, come into my office and tell me about how wonderful they are and all of the great things they're grateful for.
They say, Dr. Beef, I want to pay you to listen to me tell you how awesome everything is in my life.
Right? So here's just a touch of some of these things that they're looking at. So courage, valor, perseverance, dignity, mm-hmm. honor, integrity, honesty, authenticity, zest, enthusiasm, intimacy, reciprocal attachment, kindness, generosity, nurturance, emotional intelligence, psychological flexibility, curiosity, interest, love of learning, critical thinking, open-mindedness, creativity, originality, ingenuity, awe, wonder, appreciation of beauty and excellence. Doesn't it make you feel good just to hear this?
I'm feeling good already.
Hope, optimism, future-mindedness, playfulness, humor, spirituality, a sense of purpose and faith, etc. So here's the thing, is that the display of a strength does not diminish other people in the atmosphere. So indeed, when we witness it, we're elevated. We feel elated. We feel inspired when we witness it. So here's an example I used to give in my class when I taught on this subject. This is a statement from an 18-year-old freshman. And she's kind of, this is an example of being elevated by witnessing virtue. So she's talking about an experience she had. She said, so me and a bunch of kids, we were all going home from the big game on a snowy night. So we were driving. They didn't know each other. Okay, they're in some big van or something. So so it's a snowy night, and we passed an old woman shoveling her driveway. Hmm. One of the guys asked the driver to let him out. I thought he was just going to take a shortcut home. But when I saw him go over to the woman and pick up the shovel, well, I felt a lump in my throat, and I started to cry. I wanted to tell everyone about it. I felt romantic towards him. So do you see, she didn't even know that guy, but she's elevated by bearing witness to his virtue. So, I mean, what's more attractive than virtue? Certainly not how we look.
That's a good tip for people out there, right?
Well, I mean, that's
pick
not
up the shovel.
That's
man.
Not that's yeah. not my angle. But when I when I presented this slide, for the students in school, of course,
that's great.
Of course, all the girls were like, "Who's that guy?
Right.
Tell me about that guy."
Who's the guy that's helpful and compassionate and kind and thoughtful and giving?
Well, he's operating on a whole other plane, right? Because he's thinking about things other than himself and his own, you know, self-interest in the moment. So stuff like that doesn't happen all the time. But when it happens, we're moved, right?
We notice it, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're inspired by it. It's something, you know, when she said, I wanted to tell everyone about it, it's that feeling you want to make it bigger, you want to share it with other people.
So the idea of exercising those strengths and virtues, you gave us a good list, quite a list of character strengths and virtues. But when you talk about exercising those things on a consistent basis to come out of darkness, to come out of pain, to overcome discomfort, why is it important to exercise these things?
Essentially because we have great outcome that it from various different studies that it's a really powerful exercise that's negatively correlated with depression. So if we want to, if we look at clinical samples, if we want to treat depression, a great way to get at that, not the only way, but a great way, maybe an adjunctive thing to add in, is gratitude practice, or looking at how we think and kind of what we spin up and what we expand on. So there's a lot of, the most powerful outcome actually is with clinical samples with depressed people. It's really powerful. So they had some folks do a simple gratitude practice, kind of a happiness building exercise, so just logging things that they're grateful for. And what they found after only 15 days, so that
like
was the
point. Like a nightly log?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
So I don't know that they did it every night. It might have been like four times a week type of thing. But the point of measurement was 15 days, so it's 2 weeks in. Okay, so very short.
Yeah.
So just at that point of measurement, 94% of the people participating doing this had a decrease in depression. 92%, so essentially everyone, increased their happiness, so how they felt. So there was an average symptom relief of a whopping 50% after only 15 days. So that's just nuts. The results are even stronger in the hands of a good therapist.
Right.
So they look at this in other ways. So they have, you know, three groups. They have one just on medication, antidepressants. They have another group on treatment as usual, which is sort of non-specific counseling. And then they have the third group where they're doing these positive interventions. So these kind of happiness building exercises, which look a lot at gratitude practice. So they do 12 sessions of this at the end of 3 months, so just not very long. 10% of the patients with medication or treatment as usual improved, so just not much, right?
Yeah.
Versus 70%
of
the patients that were doing these positive emotions amplification strategies.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. So gratitude practice is just a very simple intervention that just shows significant benefit to our emotional life, and it shows significant health benefits.
And you're talking about, I mean, something as simple as jotting down three or four things every night that were good in your day.
That's right. And it's not that we're denying that bad things happened in that day. They probably did. So we're not denying the reality of life. We're not just saying, oh, only life is just rainbows and ice cream. We're not saying that. Instead, what we're trying to do with this practice is to balance our thoughts, to kind of balance our reality and spend a touch more time on what good is there, what great things happened, what am I grateful for? Our mind might not go right after that, so we might have to do this applied practice to make that bigger for ourselves, to make that more kind of prescient in our mind. And by writing it down, if we keep a log in that way, that's just simply a behavioral strategy to kind of make it more real for us, to spend more time on it. So it's balancing our thoughts. They even have apps, by the way, now, various different, you know, gratitude log, gratitude journal apps. You can do it on your phone if you want. I like the act of physically writing it because it's a little more effortful,
yeah.
A little more, you know, a little more vigor there.
All right, I want to remind listeners, you could still get in a phone call or an email. You can reach us at 550-8433. You can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to participate is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, well, two things are coming to mind when I'm hearing you talking about the practice, the exercising of strengths and virtues. I think about it like a muscle. Like, you can think about, we all possess these character strengths. I mean, we have virtue and we have character strengths, but if we don't exercise them, if we don't work them, they will not get stronger. And that That's what you're talking about. You're talking about strengthening these things and exercising and practicing. Because if you want to build a muscle, you must work it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the step one is maybe figuring out what your particular character strengths are. If you don't already know, it's what a great conversation to have. You should have it with your friends or your spouse, or you know, talk about that for a while. Wouldn't that be a neat thing? But if you want a coach or a guide in this, there's actually a fabulous method to do this. That's public domain. It's free. It's accessible. It's through the University of Pennsylvania. They do a lot of research on happiness and life satisfaction. It's accessible through, what, are we out of time?
No.
Oh.
No. I just realized I was looking at the wrong screen and I see we have a bunch of calls.
So, oh, we have a bunch of calls.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, well, I'll wrap it up. So authentichappiness.com is one route to get to this University of Pennsylvania think tank where they offer all kinds of different measures. And one of them is called the VIA Signature Strength Survey. And that is a free, accessible survey that you can take that will evaluate your character strengths. And then you can look at, so it'll evaluate your strengths. They have 24 character strengths that they measure. You can look at your top five and then have a kind of conversation with yourself or people that know you well about, you know, how do I feel when I express these strengths? Do they feel like me? Do I feel more alive when I'm expressing them? And so if so, then we're entering into the arena of what they call your signature strengths. So they're unique to you. They're your signature.
All your own.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a fun conversation to have.
Okay, so it's, I am, we have Roger. You're on the air with Dr. Beeth.
Hey, how are you doing today? I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for calling.
My philosophy is positive attitude. I have the philosophy that I've never had a bad day in my life, but some I sure wouldn't want to do again.
Okay.
That's great.
It works. When I tell other people that, I pass it on. And you can dwell on things that happened to your life and say, woe is me, and you always feel sad. But if you don't forget bad things, but you don't dwell on them, or they seem to grow.
Yes.
So to have a positive attitude and press on and during the torpedoes, you know, everything seems to come out for, and you got a smile on your face all the time.
All right, Roger, I think that was well said. That sort of sums up exactly what we're talking about today. So thanks for calling in and sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
Okay, we have another caller, Vivian. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. That was quick. I just picked up the last 5 minutes of your program or so because I was driving to the ski area. But briefly, I think it's a wonderful idea to practice identifying virtues and things you're grateful about. I'm 70 and, of course, had some life experiences, most of them quite good. If a person you know actually credits themselves out loud periodically with certain virtue, beware. Because they're more into the idea than the practice. An example was my ex-husband, who started saying, "I never turn my back on my friends," which seemed to include everybody except me, especially the lady he wanted to go out with.
Oh, man. Yeah. Bless your heart.
Yes, it is. I appreciate the call, Vivian. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. And thanks for the program.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, joyful people. I mean, she seemed to have a spirit in her and a snap in her voice that seemed pretty positive. We got some time for another caller. We got Caroline. You're on the air with Dr. Beeth.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm glad to hear that they're studying the healthy person, not just the person with the problems,
right,
which was done for so many years. But my question has to do with whether or not a lot of this isn't genetically programmed, because I think there were other humanoid groups out there when Homo sapien evolved, but the fact that we could count on each other and that we work cooperatively I think was perhaps one of the things that helped us make it through. And whether or not any research has been done on the genetic propensity to help each other.
Altruism.
Huh, yeah. Well, there is research on that, to answer your question. There's also research on this idea of kind of the genetic load we might have towards what we know is happiness. So we call that, we would look at that as called the set point for happiness. Do we have one? Do we have this almost metabolism towards happiness that's genetically loaded? And that's debated. There's pros and cons, you know, in terms of that or how people think of that. I think what's the most helpful? Here's the most helpful way to think about it. Because if we spend a lot of time on our genetic load, where's our control in that, right? We have very limited control or no control. So what might be more helpful is to think about what we can do with our behavior. So how can we change our life despite our genetic load? So we might be genetically loaded towards depression if we are. But where can we go from there? You know, do we have to stay stuck in that, or can we apply behavior to improve our lives and increase the amount of felt joy, increase the amount of positive emotions that we can possibly experience?
We might also be genetically loaded for high blood pressure, cholesterol, heart disease, stroke, and if we do certain behaviors that limit our risk of that, we're not bound and determined to suffer from those ailments as well. So thank you, Caroline. We have Jackie on line two. You're on the air with Dr. Beath.
Hi. You spoke about forgiveness and in the context of rape victims and whatnot, but what if it's yourself that you have to forgive for past behavior that did not show the greatest of the character traits that you talk about?
Great question.
Actually, I don't know if I understand it. So it's did you say repeat
forgive
yourself?
Yes, if it's something in your past that you've done that didn't show a great character trait, it was a character failing, a flaw that you did in your past.
Oh, a mistake made.
How do you forgive yourself instead of, you know, it's not like a rape victim is forgiving someone else. How do you forgive yourself for past behavior?
Yeah.
Guilt and shame.
Yeah, guilt and shame. Well, so that's nearly impossible to answer in a short way. That's an extremely complex idea. It's so important. So like I've told Prentice many times, you know, it deserves its own show just on that alone. But just as brief as I can be, so guilt is the function of it is a way to reinsert control in places that we don't have control. And because being out of control is a very overwhelming experience for the human animal. So we try to kind of insert guilt in there and say, oh, if only I did this, if only that didn't happen, if only I didn't take that left turn that yielded that car accident. You know, we go over and over and over this kind of guilt and shame for past mistakes. And that's
almost
kind of
reworking it.
It's our way to regain control, yeah. But the problem is it almost always becomes maladaptive, meaning it creates its own subset of problems and a life full of grief. So, you know, it's a little different when we're talking about somebody that's committing, you know, deliberate, intentional crimes. That's different than an accident, of course. So we have a different kind of path here. But again, you know, moving towards acceptance, allowing for mistakes that occur, imperfections that occur, and trying to kind of transcend those and put those in their proper place where they live, wherever they live. You know, in 1997 and 2007, you know, the places where we hurt, and then picking up now in 2014 and moving forward from this day.
Jackie, I haven't met a lot of people who haven't dealt with something or done something in their life that they feel bad about. So yes, it is about acceptance of that and our own human frailties and our own mistakes that we make and moving forward. So, but that's a great question. I'm glad Dr. Beath has volunteered to come back for another show on forgiveness.
Okay. So,
wait.
Thank you, Jackie.
Okay.
All right. That's we got a little break from the calls here. So we only got a couple minutes left, and I would like Dr. Beath to talk about a couple of tools that people might be able to use. Just briefly discuss a couple of the things that the resources and the tools that people can use to practice some of this stuff or play around with it if they want to.
So like I was just saying earlier, I think it's a fun and interesting exercise to complete the Signature Strengths Survey, determine what your character strengths are, and then enter the conversation of how can I apply these strengths more broadly across my life. It might not always be realistic or feasible, but there's actual books, you know, written on a guide to help you try to apply these strengths more broadly across your life. So how can I express this strength in more ways? So I think that's number one. Number two, and perhaps the most important thing we could do, is begin to quantify or make a behavioral practice of what we're grateful for. So this could be done in a lot of ways. So how it's done in research is by keeping a gratitude log or a journal, whatever we call it. But that's just, it's just simply a record of the things that we're grateful for or that we were astounded by, the marvelous things that fill us with awe in this life. You know, almost always people, when they have a journal, they record their heartbreak. You know, they record, oh, you know, my sadness, my places that I hurt. And I get that, and that makes sense. But what about a whole other kind of record, a whole other kind of log of the marvelous things that we noticed, that we felt in our heart, that we saw, that we bore witness to, whatever those things are. So by doing that practice, by making it behavioral, by writing it down and so forth, it amplifies it. It's connected to savoring or amplification of the experience itself. So that's how it's looked at in research, and it's just a very effective and easy and free and just easy intervention that you can do in your own life if you so choose. And it'll give you a little reorganization of your thoughts maybe, so that you're noticing or spending a little more time on what's marvelous.
A little more time on what's marvelous. Michelle sent in an email. It said, great show. What are some tips you recommend for daily practice to change the context of your life? And I think that's what you're talking about. A gratitude list is one to start with. And they can go onto that website, Authentic Happiness, and find lots of exercises and things that they can practice on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Well, we are out of time. My thanks to today's guest, clinical psychologist, Dr. Jennifer Beath. This hour was a pleasure and an education, so thanks a lot for coming. If you would like to continue today's conversation, join KSK on Facebook. You can find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org, and you can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address at line1@alaskapublic.org. We welcome any and all feedback. I think I want to close out today's show with a quote from American author Augustine Mandino. He said, welcome every morning with a smile. Look on the new day as another special gift from your Creator, another golden opportunity to complete what you were unable to finish yesterday. Be a self-starter. Let your first hour set the theme of success and positive action that is certain to echo throughout your entire day. Today will never happen again. Don't waste it with a false start or no start at all. You were not born to fail. On the next Line One, Dr. Woodard will be discussing the Blood Bank of Alaska's involvement in national studies on prevention and the early treatment of type 1 diabetes. So why not tune in and learn more Monday, March 24th at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 9 p.m. on FM 91.1 KSKA Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.